This is Emily Wright, Features and Global Editor for EG, and I'm joined today by Chris Choa, who, as of July the 1st, is the new president of the Urban Land Institute. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
It's a great location. We're here at the AECOM offices, which is also, you know, your day job, looking out over London and the Shard. And it's a very interesting time at the moment for urban land, for cities, for UK cities. We've obviously got Brexit, and we were talking earlier about that sort of tension between, you know, devolution, both fiscally and politically, between London and the regions. There's a lot to do, only 2 years to do it. What is your plan? What's your strategy?
Well, first of all, I love this view, and it reminds me that we're here in East London, in Aldgate, looking at some of the most extraordinary modern buildings in the world, but it all takes place on the footprints of Londinium, the oldest parts of London. And the fact that London can be both a historical city and a place of extraordinary growth and innovation at the same time and in the same place is a very moving image for me, and I think points to a lot of the potential of a group like ULI. That's the kind of group we want to be.
And what are your three main goals, do you think, over the next couple of years? When you step down in 2 years' time, what do you want to be remembered for achieving?
Well, first of all, I hope that we can continue to bring together the extraordinary range of individuals, disciplines, and professions that are focused on urban land. And increasingly, these include non-traditional players, people outside the development world. They'll include academics, they'll include people from the tech sector, as well as capital markets and consultancy and government. So I think that's, for us, for me personally, a very big drive. The second is to understand what better living means when we are living in the city or when we're trying to connect our metropolitan regions with the hinterlands. How can we create the broadest benefits for the greatest number of people using urban land as a tool and the policies around urban land? I think that's a second one. And the third one is just focusing on the quality of life. How do we attract young people to cities to maintain that growth? How can we distribute the benefits of the energy of young people back out into the hinterland? What are the mechanisms? What kind of infrastructure do we have to put into place? What kind of housing in attractive communities and innovation districts do we put into place to make that happen? So if I can just do anything remotely close to those three things, that would be very, very good.
It would be great to talk briefly on this podcast about those points you made about the tech sector and also to talk a bit around infrastructure. But before we get onto that, anyone who doesn't know you who's listening to this podcast will have noticed that you have an accent which suggests you're not from the UK. So you were born in New York.
I was born in New York.
To a Chinese father and a French mother?
Chinese father, French mother. I'm a first-generation American, I would suppose, but I have a French passport. And I'm on my way to getting a British one. So I think I feel very fortunate to be from these different cultures, but very conscious that I'm an immigrant and I've also benefited from a great deal of diversity.
So in this role as president of the ULI, you're going to be looking at the UK. So what can you bring to that role, having spent so much of your life in the States and in China? You know, and you have a very global role at AECOM as well. So it's a very global background now focusing on the UK. How will you bring those two together?
Well, no man is an island. And my fortunes have come from the fact that I was fortunate enough to be connected to very many places, but also benefited from the friends and the relationships that I had in local places. I think, to me, this is the historic genius of the UK. The great power of London is that it managed to be both local and global at the same time. ULI has a base in urban land, but also is very, very conscious on how to create the benefits for broad sectors of the population through the vehicle of urban land, even if people are not only focused on those areas. So, for example, if you're in the tech sector, what can you, how do you benefit and how do you contribute to the fortunes of urban land? If you're thinking about advanced mobility, driverless cars, how will the changes in technology change cities? Mm-hmm. And will it create some opportunities for people that didn't exist before? These are some of the challenges that we have for the ULI within my own profession, but really as humans in any profession moving forward.
And you mentioned the tech sector there, so let's talk about that, because that's interesting. So I know that one of the things that you're really focusing on is opening up the ULI membership and also to try and sort of broaden it out to bring in different voices, with the tech sector being one of those voices and a very important voice. Why is that so important, and how do you plan to do that?
Well, cities are powerful because they bring lots of people together. And they are not a thing, they are a system. A city is not a thing. It is a network. And tech, in particular, focuses on the power of networks, the power of systems, more than any particular part of the system. So I think as a metaphor, it's hugely informative. But because the tech sector is so focused on networks and systems, they have a lot of strategy that we can use when we plan infrastructure, for example. We can use different ways of technology-enabled decision-making to decide where we invest first or what combination of infrastructure investments might bring about a different outcome. So this is a kind of thinking that we're very interested in, and we hope very much that the tech sector gets more involved.
Great. And on infrastructure as well, that is one of the areas that you're really going to be focusing on. And I know that, you know, obviously you very much feel that infrastructure is vital when it comes to bringing together cities in the UK, both in those cities and then between those cities. Mm. So what's your plan there? And, you know, how do you see the future of infrastructure progressing? And as you said, you can't really have too much infrastructure and connectivity.
No, connectivity is destiny. There is no place that will grow if it is not connected to other places that are growing. And there is no group that will be disadvantaged by being connected to other groups. So I think infrastructure is hugely important. But it's not just the high-speed rail. It's not just the Crossrail or the airport that by itself creates the benefit. It's the relationship to the nodes, to the settlement, to the industry, to the population groups around that infrastructure that creates the broader benefit. If you can share the benefits of connective capacity with the areas that develop around an airport or a train station, for example, you allow those areas to grow. When those areas grow, they in turn induce more transportation and more connected movement. Mm. So it's a reciprocal benefit for everybody.
And finally, I know that you are going to be focused on working with UK mayors to try and pull everything together and to try and get some sort of synergy or increased synergy. Anything you want to add on that and what your plan is there?
Well, I think UK mayors are challenged by this constant tension between maintaining the solidarity and the characters of a place and creating opportunities and benefits through diversity and connectivity. There's no one-size-fits-all solution here. It's going to be a back-and-forth dialogue. I think mayors are starting to talk to each other more, and they're also starting to talk to other mayors internationally. And we hope that UK mayors from all cities and all areas can benefit from the thinking and, frankly, the innovation and possibly even learning from some of the mistakes of other mayors.
And I said finally last time, and that turns out that was a lie, because finally, your role at ACOM is so interesting, and it's so global, and you have such an amazing kind of umbrella view, if you like, as to what's going on around the world. Although you're going to be focused on the UK in this particular role, what cities would you say are the ones that we should be watching next?
Well, certainly there's going to be the continuing rise of megacities, big urban regions, you know, greater than 10 million population, and there will be 40 of them within 15 years or so. But I think there's also going to be interesting opportunities for very, very specialized mid-sized cities that are not big global powerhouses now, but for one reason or another, because of their educational base, their demographic qualities, the character of place, will become increasingly attractive for young people and will in turn help to drive their local economies and change the way people think even about their larger, bigger cities.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us, and thanks for sharing.